and welcome. I have an interesting guest today, like every week, Neha Parashar, who started out in HR, and she says, not so evil HR. And her career has evolved over the last 20 years into a place where she now helps people understand what their strengths are and points them in the right direction. So she was telling me just before we started the show that this is not exactly, it's a bit like sports coaching. Okay. And hi, Neha, welcome to the show.
You talked me into it like a true media ad person.
Okay. So Neha, like we, you know, to pick up from where we just, before we started the show, what is it that you spend a lot of your time on these days?
So these days I am full-time coach. And when I say coach, the word is understood and misunderstood in many ways. Right. Initially, when I told my parents I coach, they thought of it as, you know, the IIT coaching or, you know, what kind of coaching? The school coaching, tuitions, are you going to take tuitions? What coaching are you talking about? So that is the first, our first foray into coaching, right? Competitive exams when we are thinking about it. So that is true. That is coaching. There is sports coaching. Any kind of input that helps somebody do better can fall under coaching as long as you're working with the person one-on-one and working specifically on them. When I say I work as a coach, there are two or three areas that I specifically focus on. Okay. One is the interview coaching part that I was telling you about, which is for senior level people, which is like sports coaching. There is instruction, there is practice, there is a lot of one-on-one work on improving their skills around it. This is not exactly what we are, what is now the discipline of coaching as the International Coach Federation by their definition. Okay. In that coaching, or what we call developmental coaching to some extent, is as a coach, I will not instruct, I will not advise, in which I will only be asking powerful questions to help my client come to their answers by themselves. A lot of people sometimes reach out to me for career advice. I said, I can advise you, but that is not coaching. So that is a different aspect. Coaching will involve you doing the work.
Right. And okay? You putting so it, yes.
Like, very true. It's like going to the gym. So don't expect the instructor to work for you.
You still have to lift the weights.
Absolutely. That's what I spend most of my time on currently, professionally.
Okay. So, you know, how did it all begin? What was it like? You know, go back to that time when you were in college and try to figure out what should I do next. So if you could take it through those early days and then say, okay, where did it?
It didn't even start in HR, so to say. Okay. I heard you say I started my career in HR. Actually, it started before that.
Okay.
So when I was in school, I mean, I was a good student academically, but what was so in our times was that everybody will have to sit for entrance exams, right? Either medical or JE.
Engineering, yeah, JE.
Right, those are the two key options available for science students.
Right.
I sat for the exams and I did not make it. Okay. And then I was wondering, what next? So in those days, we had to go to colleges and get into lines and get physical forms, physical copies of forms, fill those out, submit it to those colleges, right? So I was visiting colleges in Delhi and trying to figure out what subjects would my marks qualify for, which are also of interest to me. So I had several subjects in mind and I was exploring, you know, and things like even geography and history and economics and, you know, okay, what is it that, where can I get into the cutoff thing? You know, where do I qualify and what is of interest to me? And there I saw a line in one of the colleges for journalism. So you were starting out the bachelor's honors in journalism at that. And that form, I mean, that course had an entrance exam.
Okay.
So I said, brother, you know, let's sit for this. This seems interesting. This seems cool. It involves writing, reading, and who knows what else. So I sat for that exam. And I did well in that exam, very well in that exam. And I got into journalism. So my first job, actually, since this podcast is about my first job, was actually interning as a journalist. HR came about after that.
You interned at the Times of India? Now I recall that. What happened at the internship? Do you recall aspects of the internship?
Yeah, good and bad memory. I'm just thinking about it. So there we were first used to be put into the editing. We had to sub copies. That was the first entry into the world of work. I thought I used to like it until I got a very, very severe thrashing from one of the seniors for not knowing my job.
Okay.
So this got a huge scolding about, you know, what have you studied? You haven't studied any of this. And what have you come here for? That was at that time that's a bad memory, which I laugh about now. So that I started my career with such a sound thrashing, which instilled in me more love for copy. And not to say that I don't make errors and typos now. I still do quite a lot. But that stint helped me develop a strong eye for errors.
Yes, eye for detail.
So when you know, both of us write on LinkedIn, and when I see people writing stuff like, it does not matter, write anything. You know, you can, you know, grammar can be off, and you know, don't worry about spelling. And I cringe about it. I said, like, how can you? Like, especially professional writers, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so that was the first foray into work.
Yeah, that was, all of those are part of that little journey. How long was the internship?
It was supposed to be 2 months, which continued further. So once I moved into writing for them, then we could write for longer, much longer, as long as we wanted to, as interns or freelancers or whatever you...
Yeah, and then what happened? Okay.
So in those times, there used to be a pullout just after the editorial page. And every week, they used to cover a particular section. So one day, it would be careers. Another day, it would be health. Then it would be lifestyle. So every day, the page opposite the op-ed was...
Okay.
Had one pull-out section, a column kind of a thing. So I wrote for health. I wrote for careers at that time, where that would go. My first article was actually about lingerie.
Oh.
So I was sent to write something about something, which was, and I stared at the editor who was asking me to do that. And she said, it's your job. Go ahead and do it. I said, okay, fine. It's a job. I'll go ahead and write about it. So my first article actually was on lingerie and on health and career and education. So all of that stuff I wrote for them. And then when I finished my graduation, again, I was at a crossroad. I didn't know what to do next. As in, I wanted to study more and I wasn't sure what can one study more in journalism. It is, it's supposed to be just when you start doing it. What's there to study more?
Right.
But I was also in between. So I missed that. I did an internship with production houses.
Right? Okay.
Romesh Sharma and Uma Gajapati Raju. They had a company called Moving Picture Company. So they were into producing, I think it was called India This Week, a show called India This Week.
Yeah, I remember India This Week. Long ago, when was this in the around? It
was late 90s, 97.
Yeah. I think, yeah, India around. This Week, TV was just kind of coming into its own, right?
So I was working with them on a program they were doing for the 15th August, 50th Independence Day of India. So they were preparing a special program for that. So I worked with them on that. And I enjoyed that work. So I was doing research and writing bits, doing some voiceovers. So that experience was a very interesting one. So I thought the next step would be going into learning, making documentaries and films. Where could one do that? So I thought I would give a shot to going at Jamia. So that required a lot of work. So I put a lot, you know, I had an excellent portfolio. I thought the portfolio was great. All my articles, all my work with two kinds of media. But because now I'm connecting the dots as I'm talking to you, that was the first main interview that I failed.
Oh.
There was an entrance exam there as well. I think I did okay there. The portfolio was good. I don't think I did well in the interview. It was the first very large panel that you kind of see in movies, like several people sitting across one candidate.
Intimidating.
Intimidating panel.
Can be,
looking absolutely no smiles or laughter or levity. And so it was an intimidating interview. I did not get through. Now I'm back again wondering what next. So then HR happened. My father had purchased, SIBM was one of the forms that he had purchased, and it was, I think, a fairly expensive form at that time for the entrance exam there. I did not know about anything about HR or management, or I was pretty clueless. But because the form had been purchased, and that was, so go sit for the exam as well. So I went and sat for that exam. I did well in that exam, but I was not serious about it. Now that I'm thinking about it, I hadn't thought about, as I said, I wasn't clear about HR or management at all at that point of time. And when I'm thinking about it, I think I must have not been serious at all, because typically the exams that I was very serious for, my father used to drive me down or come along with me for the entrance exam or an interview or whatever, you know, they would, right. He would have come. This one, I said, not so important. I'll just take the bus and go.
Okay. That's all the important. Okay.
So I just ordered, I said, which number? Just tell me which number goes to this place where they're holding the interview. I'm telling you a lot of stuff that I haven't told anyone, Vinu. And I'm doing that on a show, so which is very... Okay, anyways. So yeah, I landed there. The point that what I'm thinking about right now is that I must not have been too serious about it, because I took a bus, which means your clothes get crushed and you're not like looking your best when you are at the interview. Yeah. It's not, you're very prim and proper, but okay, fine. Since they've called you for an interview, go for the interview and so on. So anyways, shortening it, landed in SIV.
Okay.
So that's where the HR journey is.
Okay. Okay. And what were your expectations at that point? You said, "Acha, I've gotten." Now, did you have any expectations of the job? Did you know what things would be like? What was it like?
The jobs didn't turn out to be the kind of stuff that we studied. And I don't think that's surprising for anybody at all. Like, we study, there are textbooks and stuff, and we do that. Right. And the job is like, you have to bring all of yourself again into the job. Right. Whatever that you may have acquired from wherever, and acquire new ones. And then one wonders, this is not what the textbooks say.
Yeah.
I think the beginning is to get started in a career. And then one has to build further on from there on.
Okay.
So I can't remember if I had any very specific expectations, except let's get working.
Right. So then what were the main functions as far as you were concerned in the first job? What did you start off with? Were you looking at recruiting people, talking to people internally? What happened?
Recruitment was definitely a big chunk. I realized, not because of my background in journalism, I somehow gravitated towards elements of communication even within the HR room. If it were like anything that required writing, newsletters or any kind of communication. And in recruitment also, I was working for the first, at least a couple odd years, I was working on recruitment ads in print media. That was interesting. I thought it was similar to the kind of job I was doing. I was subbing again. I was editing copy. Mm-hmm. I was correcting copy, faxing, signing it off, then faxing again. So I remember, Friday evenings used to be, Times Ascent used to go out on Wednesday, used to get published on Wednesday. And the deadline used to be Friday. So I remember staying in every Friday evening used to be like a late nighter. So it was, and we had faxes, right? So they used to edit some copy. The agency used to send me some copy. I used to read it, find some error, some comma, something, then send it back. So those were fax days, right? So sitting by the fax machine, going ping, 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 fax is going. Then they make the change, then they send it back on fax again. Then I edit the fax again, and then slowly the fax is going again. It almost sounds so primitive now, but till the sign off, till I signed off on the final copy for it to be published. So in HR also, it was a lot of recruitment. Sourcing side was ads, vendors, agencies, and so on. And otherwise, it was interviewing.
So things were a blur, or you got a feeling that this is more or less something that I can do for a little while before I figure out what I want to do next?
No, at that point of time, I wasn't thinking what I want to do next at all. I was very immersed. I did not rethink. I think I landed in the right place. Okay. Gravitated to stuff that was of interest. Yeah, in fact, if I were to think about it now, certain skills have continued throughout the career, whether it was journalism, whether it was HR, now it is coaching. Communication of some sort has stayed. People interaction in terms of one-on-one conversations has stayed. I was doing exactly talking to people one-on-one while I was writing an article, for example, researching for an article. I was doing that again when I was interviewing. I'm doing the same thing again in coaching. So these common, I can see common threads now after 20 years.
Right. So what were the first experiences of interviewing people for their jobs like? You were a recent recruit, or you started talking or conducting interviews about 5-6 months into your job, or was it a little later?
Yeah, soon after. So,
okay.
Of course, the
okay.
quality of interviews has evolved over time. Like initially, it would be like an initial cut, like you get with the rookie to start doing the initial cuts kind of thing.
Right.
Sourcing was bigger back then. We were hiring very large in the IT and IT sector. So a lot of focus was on, it was almost like sales, like generating candidate. And then interviewing, of course, evolved as like.
So then at that point, it was the method of shortlisting was to go through a number of resumes, figure out which ones made the cut, and then you sort of ask them to come for an interview.
Yeah, or... no AI, no, nothing of that sort.
That's what I wonder now. When it comes to AI, it's only looking for keywords. So how do you get past and the number of volume of interviews? The thing has increased tremendously. So how is it that people are going through these numbers is mind-boggling.
See, even then, we were doing it manually, but keywords were important then as well, right? So, for example, if I was in the very beginning, say I'm hiring for, say, a particular software skill, for example, I don't understand the content, but I would sit with the hiring manager to understand what do you want me to look for?
Okay.
And what is absolutely critical for you? What are the desirables for you? So, and then I would actually be looking for keywords, right? So I still remember, you know, I was hiring for something that is stuck in my brain because we couldn't find people for that. At that point of time, there used to be enterprise Java beans. Now I can't remember for the life of me what that was.
Okay.
You know, so we were like going crazy looking for this particular skill set on a CV.
Okay.
I remember, you know, there was a candidate whose name was Meja Bean. So I said, you know, I can't find a Java bean. Will a Meja Bean do?
And it's strange how these things just stick, you know, the kind of things that stay with you. Like you said, it was so desperate and it required to be filled, which is why it's kind of stayed with you. Now, of course, it's a...
I hadn't thought about this for a very, very long time, Bin. So I hope Meja Bean is not watching wherever she is.
Okay. How did things progress from there?
So recruitment has been very critical all through, even in senior roles. So talent acquisition, talent attraction has been important all through. And another big portfolio that I managed and I really enjoyed that was learning and development.
Okay.
So that was so. And then we call something called HR business partner, which to me, I think is everything is HR business partner. There's nothing which is non-HR business partner, but we in HR have a role called business partner. So recruitment and L&D or comp and bin, they are considered like COE roles. Like these are centers of excellence or whatever. These are like technical functional teams. HR business partner roles are in which somebody's assigned to partner with a particular business or business units and so on. These are just role demarcations. Otherwise, I think every business, every role in HR is required to be a business partner. So I held all of these roles.
So how would you make your decisions? Yes. Qualifications, yes. Keywords, yes. Interactions at the interview, yes. But was there something that told you that this person seems to fit the job, or this person may not be a good fit for the job? Are those instinctive, or does it develop over time?
I think instincts also develop over time.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah.
I think experience matters there. Also, I think it is important to have robust processes which can mitigate, you know, all things that we call as biases or the human intervention or subjectivity. Those will stay. As long as these processes involve human interactions, they will stay. And I don't think there is something intensely wrong with that, because ultimately it is people who will be working with people.
Yeah.
So if all of my selection mechanisms say this seems to be a great candidate, but for whatever reason, the manager takes a dislike to a particular candidate, it may not work. Hiring is not, it's not intensely objective. We can try making it so. We can bring in multiple decision makers into the mix, which is a good thing to do. But it is not one thing that will get somebody selected. It is okay. A composite of things. And ultimately, I say this often, ultimately, I think interviews are about showing competence, as in the candidate shows their competence. And the second thing is about comfort. Is the other party comfortable with you? So competence and comfort, these have to come together for somebody to be hired. Hmm. And then everything else comes from there, right? When we're talking competence, we're talking about all of these rounds and technical, whichever way an organization wants to check the competence part. Comfort part is a lot to do with interviews. Hmm. Do I feel comfortable? So all the people who are meeting somebody, do I feel comfortable seeing this person every day? Do I feel comfortable bringing this person on board? Are they going to be productive? Are they going to be a pain in the back, pain in the neck, whatever? So is it going to be difficult to manage? Are they going to be able to manage well? So all of this element is the subjective element. Yes. We may do all the tests and everything. Those are at best indicators of they give you certain pointers to explore further on. They are not, they cannot, should not be decisive factors in this.
Very true. So then what was there a trigger point for the next change in the company or in your career? What happened from there on?
Where were we?
You said you started off and the first place where you were doing recruitment.
Yeah.
And
yes. So complete immersion has been there all through. I think it's it's
one of your characteristics.
Not just mine. I think it's a huge misunderstanding or lack of misinformation if people think that HR doesn't have much to do. Plenty to be there is a lot to do. There's a lot to do there. I think all of the roles have been very immersive. L&D again was a very busy and rich experience. Business partner roles are always again very engaging and engaged. Yeah, so subsequently it has been like moving from one organization or role to another.
Okay.
So moving to different or better opportunities. Until, of course, I decided that I will quit corporate and move wholly into coaching.
Okay. Do you think the interview itself is enough? Or is there something that you have found is a better indicator of talent or ways to recruit people?
I don't think we've reached a stage or ever we will reach a stage where one can forego interviews. I think interviews will stay. When you say there's something else other than interview, I think we can keep refining our interview processes and interview skills. Is there anything that will replace it entirely? I do not know. These are interesting times. Anything can happen. Tomorrow's week, you know, something can come up which can replace that. Who knows?
Yeah.
But if we are working with humans, I think humans would want to have that interaction to know whether this works or not. It is like arranged marriage or love marriage, but the interaction will have to happen, right? It could be two meetings or one.
Yeah.
Earlier, it used to be none, but at least somebody used to meet somebody, right?
Yeah. But not like... one of the things that I hear is that the number of rounds of interviews has increased exponentially in the last few years. What is that a result of?
I don't think it has increased exponentially over the last few years. I think it has varied based on, I think one very critical element could be the level of the role that somebody is being interviewed. So, That could be one parameter. There are others as well, of course. But I would want to... So, of course, I'm not saying organizations should continue interviewing people forever and, you know, take months to interview. I'm not a big believer in that. However, I think multiple rounds are as much in favor of the organization, as much in favor of the candidate as they are in favor of the organization. As a candidate, I've been through interview rounds like 7 or 8 interview rounds for a particular role. While that is a tiresome process, it gave me a lot of data and information about whether I truly want to work with somebody or not. It is not as if the organization was evaluating. A candidate ought to be evaluating the organization as well and the people that they're going to be working with. I again say it is not. Some organizations have unnecessarily long processes. I don't know for what reason. It could just probably the process needs streamlining. But otherwise, I don't think we should be shy of at least a few interview rounds. we are thinking of that job in the for the longer term. If it is like, I'm here for a year or two, I know exactly what is required to be done. You check my skills, get me on, I will deliver and I will get. If it is as simple as that, which is possible in junior roles, then there's no point in having a very, very prolonged process. As you move senior, when your role has more impact and is impacting more people, you're making more critical decisions. You want the person to stay on for the longer term. I think it is okay to have multiple conversations.
Right.
Another reason, I think, which sometimes people, organizations call candidates over again and again, is when they like the candidate, but they are not quite sure where to fit them. That happens, you know. Okay. It's like, your CV comes to me. I say, excellent CV. Looks like a great candidate. But I don't have a role ready for this person. His or her skills not fit just right into something that we are hiring for just now. So I'd say I'd still want him to meet someone. Let's see if we can figure something out.
Okay.
So those are the conversations. You know, I have done that. Like, you know, some excellent candidate, I would say, you know, I will get you to meet with 3 business leaders. And then let's see if something comes up from there. And the thing is, for candidates who are exceptional, who are doing very well in these conversations as well, the role may not come up today, but it may come 3 months down the line.
True.
And it's great to have these interactions. Even if somebody does not get a role then, you have added 5 more people into your network. If you're doing well, they will remember you. Where else will I get, you know? It's not like now this LinkedIn, earlier there wasn't anything such. How would we get access to somebody at that level who will spend an hour talking to you?
So internally, how would you make these calls in terms of having to move organizations? You worked with some very big names, Cisco and DuPont and G Capital, all extremely worldwide renowned names. So tell me, what goes through your mind when you have to make a call and then say, okay, what is this organization going to be like? What is it that I'm going to be doing that is different from what I'm doing now?
So you're talking about as a candidate or as a...
As a candidate. Because now I'm saying, I'm looking at your... How is it that you made your personal choices?
I think they weren't very complicated.
Okay.
It was a good brand name, a good role, as in either expanding further into what I'm trying to do currently, what I'm doing currently, or something newer. And so growth in that terms. And very importantly, the people I'm going to be working with.
So you had to have a level of comfort when you met them, saying that, yes, these are people I think I can get along with. Or, you know, those are going to be part of the decision framework that you deployed.
Very important. They were a very important part of the decision making. And I believe for myself, it should be. I recommend that candidates also be as evaluative.
Okay.
Because you're going to give your blood, sweat and tears to that place once hired. So you might as well decide well.
Now, there are a couple of things which I want to ask about. Saying that now there is a lot of market chatter, let's say on Glassdoor or some of the others, where people put up their reviews or of workplaces and all of those things. How do you think that has impacted the overall recruitment scenario? And how should people navigate through something like that?
I do recommend researching as much as possible. That is important. And it is all the more important now because there are a lot of organizations that are young organizations. They haven't really, they have been around for a short while. And especially the startup world and everybody. So you wouldn't find too many alumni to talk. They have not been written about. We don't know about their practices. Interestingly, most of the organizations I have been, or people go for big brand organizations because those have been around. These are big ships. Their processes are in place. There is little risk of where you're going to land. There's enough. If they have poor practices, one, they wouldn't have stayed on for as long. And two, you would hear of them. There is news about them. I mean, there's content about, when you research, you would know whether it is worth going to one. There is something you would know about their culture and all. Those are the safer bets in that way. But with now so many new organizations that are coming up and with good opportunities as well, I think it is very, very important to research culture and again, the team or the manager you're going to be with, because there is little else you can do.
Yeah. Very true.
You can't do anything about the health of the organization. You can research about it. You can research about financial health. You can research about
Now, when people enter their first job, they're looking for a few things, which is, okay, large company, well-known, pay packet. What do you think they should prioritize? Learning, role, and pay. If I had to take three aspects of a job, what should they be spending the initial years on?
We go by a rule of thumb. We say at least two of these. So don't compromise on. If you have all three, terrific. Absolutely.
Okay.
But don't move just for one. At least have two things in the mix. A great role, which improves your further career prospects. Great pay, which is one important parameter of a good role. Which is the third one, did you say?
Learning.
Organization.
Yeah.
So match short-term and long-term much as possible. So if you're moving only for pay and the other two don't match up, then you're compromising your long-term for the short-term. If you're only looking at a great brand name, but the role is no good, pay probably will be, again, you're compromising long-term and short-term. So try to strike a balance there.
Okay.
Don't do just one parameter unless that is very, very critical.
Right. In your opinion, is there a way that you can figure out when it is time to move? Or there is this old wisdom saying that, okay, every time you get a recruiter's call, go ahead and take it just to figure out what your market value is. But make your decisions based on where you think you should be going. So what exactly is your take on that?
It is personal for everyone. It is hard to, it should not be that my friends are moving every year and I've been here for 3 or 5 years and should I be moving now? Or neither should it, so it cannot, it is a personal decision. Again, I think it is important to frequently evaluate whether you're adding value, your environment, your organization as well. So that is something that I think we should continue to evaluate. Not every 6 months, but at least every year, every couple of years. I don't, I have seen very young people in early career saying, I'm not making an impact in 3 months or 6 months. It doesn't.
Which is, you can't make an impact.
Maybe you can. Yeah. But I mean, if somebody does exceedingly well on social media, they can probably make an impact in 6 months, maybe. But early on in your career, I think it is time to learn. There is a value to mundaneness, which I think some of our young friends get bothered by very quickly. It is repetitive and it is mundane and it is 3 months down. It's 6 months, I'm doing exactly the same thing. I think there is some value to that because, I mean, how does learning happen? Learning happens when some deviation happens. So I'm doing repetitively a task, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 10th time, there might be a slight deviation. Something will either break down in the process or some parameter will change. Something will happen which breaks that repetitiveness. And it is addressing that where the learning comes from. And handling that deviation is the learning.
True.
So if we give up with that repetitiveness, we will never reach the point too quickly. One, we will not gain from the learning that comes from the skill that comes from repeating something. And two, we will not arrive at a place where we are able to learn from that deviation.
True.
Am I making sense? I mean, it is...
Absolutely. I'll just relate this to writing copy.
Okay.
The first 10 lines that you come up with are all cliches. They've all been used. It gets progressively more difficult to write the 20th line for the same ad. So a lot of people today, they say, but the deadline is tomorrow, so I don't have time. But the point is that unless you keep writing the cliches, you will never come up with something original. You have to cross that. So like you mentioned, you have to cross a river, you have to steadily take one stroke after another. And at some point, you'll reach the other shore. There's no change in that, but you have to persist. So whatever you just said makes so much of sense. And that is one of the things which I think you pointed out, which is very important. The importance of mundaneness. I would have said boredom. They're scared of boredom today. You shouldn't be, because you should. That's a phase.
see, a job is not for entertainment. Yes. We have to derive joy in that job. And the joy comes. There is joy to working at something, developing something, meeting a challenge.
Right.
I mean, be afraid of boredom when you've stopped learning entirely.
Right.
So now I realize cycle times have shortened. Organizations are moving at a tremendously fast pace. Now it is between boredom and burnout, either one or the other.
Yeah, that's the other side. That's the other extreme. Yeah, very true. So in your personal frame of reference, when did you think it is time to branch out in your pivot of helping people or become a coach?
See, it isn't a very big deviation, if I were to think of it that way. It is a deviation of the sort that, of course, from being employed and pursuing with a corporate career, breaking out and branching out and becoming self-employed, in that way, it is a big deviation. But what it actually is in terms of work, I've taken a tiny sliver of the work that was anyways a part of my job all these years, last 20 years, and just zoomed in on it.
Okay.
And enlarged it tremendously. So in HR also, we are talking to people one-on-one. And I enjoy doing that. It requires listening skills. It requires empathy. It requires non-judgment. It requires allowing and giving yourself the space for reflection. So all of those are part of the role that you're playing in HR as well. Of course, they are never part of the KRAs. You're never right. Rewarded or promoted for it. But they are part of doing your job well.
Right.
So I have just picked that sliver and enlarge it substantially into a full-time role.
Okay.
So, yeah, that is the kind of pivot that I haven't changed track, so to say, entirely. But that's how I think of it.
Okay. Like you said, you help senior people. What are the things that they're struggling with? Is it articulation? Is it an understanding of where their career should be going?
It could be any and all of these, Vinu.
Okay.
So, I typically work with people who would say have like 15, 20 years of experience. On the executive coaching side, it could be how to be doing better at what they are doing in terms of, you know, how to be better leaders, how to work better for in the role that they are in. At that stage in the career, it is not as much about skills. I think they have developed and they have arrived where they have having a very robust skill set. The conversation becomes more about the person who then is the role. So it becomes more self-work, which then starts manifesting in better outcomes at work as well. It will. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It is not dissociated. That could be the executive coaching part. Career coaching, if somebody, typically people would reach out to me for wanting to make transitions, for example, struggling with some career dilemmas or decisions. Again, what to do better and how to grow further. And then the roots can be anywhere. It could be inner work that is required. Say for interviews, it is nothing but, you know, that's a different piece altogether. What is the question?
Is there a lot of human psychology involved in what you're currently doing?
I have not studied psychology. Is one a student of human behavior? Yes. So, yes, that is there. There could be intersections. I am trained as a coach, not as a psychologist.
What is the hardest thing to assess in an interview?
We can go wrong anywhere. Let me put it that way. We can go wrong anywhere. I am on the other side where I am coaching people to deliver better performance in interviews. I mean, I recommend and I work with them to work on their areas of strength, highlighting what they have, you know, what they can bring to the table, what their unique propositions are. What is the hardest thing to assess is what you're asking.
See, okay, one thing that comes for me is how determined is the person and how much of an effort will they put in once they've taken on? Those, I think, are realizations that happen after the person joins. Or is there some way of determining if...
Yeah, a lot of interviews are about past experiences. So we are demonstrating a trajectory. We are demonstrating this is how I have done it or been successful. And there's a high probability I will bring the same skills, mindset to the new job as well. But it is not... We say past is a predictor of future, but it is an imperfect statement.
Yes.
We cannot fully assess. So yeah, what is the hardest thing to assess? I think potential is the hardest to assess. We say we are assessing, but it is very audacious to say that we can assess human potential. I mean, there are enough number of completely demolished that.
Yeah.
So there's lots of work on the side of research and work that has gone into assessing potential.
Great. Tell me, for people who are entering the profession right now, what do you think that they should be concentrating on? Communication, like you mentioned right at the beginning, is one of the most important skills. Written skills, reading, what are the things that you would say are what young people should focus on today when they are looking to enter or get noticed? I mean, it starts with the application, of course.
very simply one, prepare for the interview. Don't try to wing it. And this is something that I continue saying even at senior levels. And it is more required actually. So prepare. That is
don't fake it till you make it.
even if you're not faking it. And I speak that from my personal experience. I mean, the interviews that are not one is not prepared move differently. Right. You know the difference.
Absolutely.
So one prepared. Absolutely. So that is what I would suggest to youngsters as well. The other would be to collect experiences, all kinds of experiences, depending on what you like to do. It need not be academic, only job oriented. But when you collect experiences, that is, you're basically collecting stories that make you more endearing in an interview. Because say, if you're talking to young people, right? So for example, in campuses or if you're hiring them, they are all at a similar IQ level, give or take, plus or minus a little. They are all at a similar, they've studied the same stuff. They all have similar academic histories. You will differentiate yourself by these experiences that you've collected. So, and that actually continues further down the your career as well. I recommend keeping a career inventory.
Oh, that's a lovely term, career inventory.
If you don't want to do that, keep a record of keep your performance appraisals documents with you every year on year. That starts becoming your inventory. These are experiences that you've collected through the years. And these all will come handy when you appear for your next job or when you have to look back at your career to see what kind of skills you've acquired, whether you want to journal it or keep a record of some of these things, of the good moments, of the failures, of the challenges, of the new things learned. So collect experiences and keep a record.
Wonderful, Neha. Career experiences, collect experiences and maintain a career inventory. I think that is wonderful advice. You may not have it to begin with, but it's something that you can build with practice over time. It was wonderful listening to how you arrived at what you did and how you almost seamlessly managed to move through the career experiences so far. And I think that the clarity of thought, sincerity with which you've approached every single one of your assignments comes through loud and clear. Thank you for spending the time, Neha. Any closing thoughts? Anything that you'd like to leave us with?
It has been, it wasn't as daunting as I thought it would be.
Wonderful.
The roles, because as I was telling you, as a coach, I ask questions. And it is the client that who has to do the thinking. And in reverse the roles, it was enjoyable. And it was lovely to revisit some of the experiences in my inventory that I had forgotten. Thank you for this opportunity.
Wonderful.
And I hope your listeners, viewers, take something away.
I'm sure they will. I'm sure there's a lot for them to think about. It's not answering all questions. Sometimes, as long as you leave people thinking with what they should do next, we've arrived at done the job. Thank you, Neha. Thank you very much.
Thank you.